For the midterms, if possible, hand the first question in tomorrow to my room 41 or 42 in the guest house so I can start marking them and everything in by Saturday, 2 p.m. Let's look at some homework questions. I was asking you your personal impressions of presentations of Krishna Leela that were in poor taste and in good taste. Grosser plays than those of the Australian players could not even be conceived of by anyone else on the planet. And she tells of a play with Krishna's pastimes, and Krishna was in the wrestling arena. The wrestlers had very fat bodies painted all over with tattoos, such as "I love mum." As they fought with Krishna and Balaram, they called out supposedly funny comments, and they just detracted from the attention which should have been focused on Krishna and Balaram. This often happens in our slapstick ISKCON skits, that Maya is really played up and done very, everyone is captivated by Maya, and Krishna doesn't come across as interesting or strong. So many plays are done. Jaghai and Madhai. The big scene is when Jaghai and Madhai come out, and we see how they're drunk, and they go through that whole routine. It's just like, it's riotous, it's funny, but then like Lord Chaitanya is almost like anticlimactic to the buffoons. So we shouldn't do that. And she points out that the whole thing became just a comedy about the big fat wrestlers and not Krishna and Balaram. On the other hand, one play done there in Australia, the children were dressed up in very colorful dhotis and kurtas hemmed with gold. They each had a turban with flowers and pearls and nice tilak. They sang Krishna's pastimes, and Krishna and Balaram looked especially beautiful. Everyone was charmed to see them. They were just like the mood of cowherd boys, happy, carefree, pure and simple. The guests were moved, and so on. A lot of it has to do with beauty in the eye of the beholder. Some persons pointed out specific paintings that they didn't like, and then someone else said that they did like that painting. And so Bhakta Charles commented on this relativity. I remember that one time I seen an advertisement in the street, a picture of Gopal, and I thought, this is in very poor taste. They exploit the form of Krishna to sell something. Like in the West, they expose a woman's form. But another day, I could see the same advertisement and think, this is great because it reminds me of Krishna at a moment when I was forgetting him. Therefore, we see that something appears good or bad according to our own consciousness. We should also give opportunities for everyone to appreciate things. Someone may consider this painting is very beautiful, and someone else should think this painting is important. Well, that's an aspect. That's an aspect to it also. So, but I thought it's worth giving some of the opinions because it reminds us of the wealth of Krishna presentations that we do have and how they can help us remind us of Krishna. The Krishna art book was a favorable presentation of Krishna Leela. This is this very big deluxe edition of the VBT painting that's come out. It costs over $100. And beautiful. And it made a beautiful selection, beautifully produced. First thing is saying, this is an example. This book also represents Prabhupada's potency in inspiring such work by his desire to serve his spiritual master. He enthused so many talented artists. Someone said, poor taste, some of the Indian style movies of Harikatha. Although some devotees mentioned that they liked the Lord Chaitanya movie, two movies made in the 1950s. Leading kirtans out of tune, although I try to preach to my mind in such situations, is difficult. Now this reminds me that in the Madhurya Kandimbini, Vishnu Chakravarti mentions this under Ruchi, that in the lower stage of Ruchi, where you do have taste, you demand that things be done artistically nice, and then you can appreciate it. But a higher stage of taste is, it doesn't matter if everything is done with perfect balance and aestheticism, but as long as it's Krishna's name or whatever, you appreciate it. So that can apply to the kirtans. However, we can't imitate, and Prabhupada, he approved of making things nice. He once said that the temple, with its nice aromas of incense and when it's beautifully decorated and so on, creates a groundwork for ecstasy. But still, there is that higher principle I just mentioned. Maybe when we find ourselves being too critical, we can remember that oh, this music isn't nice, he's not playing that nice, that it can be the material aestheticism that we're applying. Now, here's an example, however, of something that was seen to be so poorly presented that you sympathize with the devotee's distaste for it. I once saw a large deity of Krishna in a well-known Hindu temple in South Africa. I was shocked. He was standing alone in the middle of a large open space filled with coarse sand against a crudely painted backdrop. The immediate impression was that Krishna was standing in a field of cactus plants in a desert. The deity was painted a dull powder blue with an equally dull yellow dhoti, no expression in the face, no beauty, no mood, nothing attractive. But this also indicates that the people taking care of the deity or neglecting the deity, that they don't have devotion. We can appreciate, like sometimes we see a temple in India, they don't have money like you have in the West, they can't afford so many dresses. And still, we can see the devotion that's there. But when there's no devotion, when something is really neglected, then what can we say? We can't appreciate it. My most favorable impression of Krishna is through the medium of the written word, Prabhupada's books and the books of the Goswamis. During a Sunday feast lecture, one devotee started describing about Krishna and the gopis quite intimately. I was feeling uneasy as he was speaking on the subject, but he kept on going. I don't think as an introduction these topics should be discussed, and when discussed, only very carefully. That Prabhupada also says that they shouldn't be discussed. Lord Chaitanya only discussed them among intimate devotees. A nice presentation. One very beautiful Krishna conscious picture is that one of Krishna and Balaram entering Mathura. Krishna looks full of freshness and youthful vigor. It shows nicely what a festival was created in Mathura by their entrance. The painting by Muralidhara Prabhu, where Mother Yasoda has her arms outstretched and Krishna is returning from the forest, running straight towards her, appeals to me. You can practically feel the intensity of emotions for Krishna in this painting. All the young gopis are there with their trays for worship, Nanda Maharaj, Mother Yasoda, so on. Poor impression. I saw a poster of Boy George in England who was posing to be Krishna. After 1 year, I'm visiting Krishna Balaram temple. I'm able to appreciate the service mood to Krishna in Vrindavan, especially Sri Srimati Radharani, who is full of love and devotion for Krishna. Favorable. Favorable dramatic performance of the Mahabharata play at Mayapur earlier this year. Poor Mahabharata, Peter Brooks. The whole thing was a disaster for a devotee. Characters, especially Krishna, ordinary mundane personalities, and yet they're trying to say that he is God. Give people a bad impression. Pastimes of Krishna in the light of the Bhagavad with all the beautiful oriental paintings. Somebody like Manipur Rasleela dancing, graceful, highly sophisticated, delicate, capturing and mesmerizing us with its spinning movements and mysterious costuming and music. That's the troupe that was being presented by Bhakti Srup Damodara Maharaj, right? Time and situation and persons determines what's in good taste also and what's appropriate. And someone says that to hear about the conjugal love affairs of Krishna and the gopis on big ISKCON parikrams where men and women are comfortably pushed together in small spaces and with other distracting influences, I think it's far better if this is discussed at all in the general assembly of devotees. It should be done advanced classes like BIHE or Srimad Bhagavatam class. Oh, this is one I agree on. Very nice. In the new Dwarka Fate Museum, the preaching dioramas, especially the last one, Radha and Krishna with 8 gopis in Vrindavan. It's very beautiful. The detail looks just like Vrindavan. Beautiful moon, and everything is there. I remember seeing that, and then after you go out, and that's the end, you go out, and it's like you want to go back inside instead of being out on the street. We left off our last time doing a group session on the cows and boys and calves who were now all Vishnu expansions and were being loved by their parents more than ever before. By Yoga Maya, Krishna was letting the parents directly love him and give him their milk. So this pastime, to appreciate it, you have to be very non-skeptical and not hard-hearted, but open to the love that Krishna is giving to the residents of Vrindavan. Our mood is to participate in the leelas being presented, so you have to appreciate love. Mm. We've learned, and even worldly people learn, that there's really no love, there's just lust. Sometimes the only difference between the neophyte devotee and the material enjoyer is they both know there's really only lust, but the materialist, he says, good, let me get it anyway, sense enjoyment. And the devotee, he doesn't want it, but he doesn't know love yet. He knows lust is harmful. So we have to appreciate the loving relationships among devotees, and especially in the Krishna book, how the devotees love Krishna and how he loves them. And think how Krishna loves us. A lot of different kind of meditation can be here in this chapter. There is such a thing as love of God, very specifically with embracing and you're giving him everything and being with him intimately. We should not doubt it, like the impersonalists. In fact, Prabhupada makes a point in his purports that this love is not to be taken as a Mayavadi realization that everything is one, that now Krishna loves everyone and everyone loves him. The individuality is there. Everyone is focusing on all attractive Krishna. So after 1 year of these kind of daily moment-to-moment exchanges, there's a scene where the cows on the top of the hill see their slightly older calves downhill, and they run after them out of so much affection. The men become angry at first, trying to check the cows, but they can't. Spontaneous love impels the cows to run down. And by the time the men finally get to the bottom and they see their children, their boys, who are taking care of those calves, then they feel great love for their boys. And in this case, all the boys and all the cows and calves are all Krishna. So this is like the culmination of this love increasing all year. And it's so amazing that Balaram who usually knows everything that's going on, wonders, what is this? Up to now, he hasn't directly said he knew. But he says, Krishna, this must be your energy, Krishna. It's bewildering everyone. These expansions, maybe yourself. So Krishna confirmed that that's what it is. Then there are these two aspects of the Leela, the loving pastimes, and then the trickery of Lord Brahma and his and the lessons Krishna gives him. So after a year, which is a moment in Brahma's time, he decides with some uneasiness to go back and see what's happened after he thought he stole the boys. And then he sees all these loving exchanges going on, and that just begins his bewilderment. And then Krishna really starts bewildering him. And Prabhupada says, the lesson here is that we should not try to overcome Krishna. Rather, instead of endeavoring to surpass him, we should surrender to him. So, first of all, Brahma can't figure out which boys are these who are still here, and which boys are these in the cave, and how can this be going on? Then, Krishna shows him that all the boys are actually Vishnu forms, and that they're coming from the body of child Krishna, and all other forms and all manifestations of the universe. It's a kind of universal form. And Brahma, he cannot grasp it, and it just bewilders him beyond comprehension. But some of the things he sees are all these beautiful Vishnu forms wearing tulsi garlands, which are being offered by devotees who worship the Lord with a great pious acts of chanting and hearing. And the word used there is buri punya, to describe the devotional activity that devotees are engaged in as they offer the Lord garlands. And in his purport, Prabhupada makes the first of several very sweet personal comments in this last Bhagavatam chapter of his. So about these, about this Buri Punya, he says, in our Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan, there is a tamal tree that covers an entire courtyard, an entire corner of the courtyard. Before there was a temple, the tree was laying neglected, but now it has developed very luxuriantly, covering the whole corner of the courtyard. This is a sign of Buri Punya. I take this to mean that the tree flourished because of the devotional activities that are going on in this area before the tree was neglected. And then in the very next purport, Prabhupada again makes a very personal comment. So this is very nice for us. The sweetest thing in Krishna's pastimes, out of all his incarnations, is Krishna in Vrindavan. And then even sweeter than that is when Prabhupada relates these things. And we hear about him in Vrindavan. Krishna in Vrindavan plus Prabhupada in Vrindavan commenting about Krishna's Vrajalila. That's the ultimate hearing experience for the Prabhupada Anuga. All those elements together. So the Vishnu forms are described as glancing at these pure devotees and sending them messages of desire. Although the devotees are desireless, they're inspiring the devotees with desires for service to render to the Lord. That's where devotees get inspirations and ideas to do nice service. It comes from Krishna glancing at them. So Prabhupada comments on that. In Vrindavan, there is a place where there was no temple, but a devotee desired, let there be a temple and seva, devotional service. Therefore, what was once an empty corner has now become a place of pilgrimage. Such are the desires of a devotee. So in this context, it means that Prabhupada was inspired by Krishna to build a temple. It was Krishna's desire. Then, when it's too much for Brahma, then Krishna switches and takes away the vision of the Vishnus and shows him the natural Vrindavan, But now, after being purified and rectified, Brahma sees Vrindavan, not as he first did, a place to look down on and criticize because it's not so majestic, but he sees this is the ultimate, even more than the Vishnus. Now I see the beauty of real Vrindavan. So when you really see Vrindavan, it's not that you have to see something that isn't there, some castles in the air or something like that. You have to just see what's actually there with the cataract of material vision removed. It's there. Same with the deities. The deities are there, but we have things in the way. But this, although this is very ecstatic and blissful for Brahma, and he's also overwhelmed. He has so many feelings. He's feeling very shameful, and he's feeling very happy, and he's feeling wonder. So he just starts crying, tears, and he falls to the ground, trembling, and then he gets up, and shaking, he starts, you can just imagine his voice as he starts, is also choking, to make his prayers. Which begin the 14th chapter, and we're going to do a reading on that. Tonight I wanted to introduce a new element, however, to help us with our group sessions. I've been telling you that I started engaging in these over the summer with a few devotees. So sometimes we taped our sessions, and I got some of them typed up. And I'd like to read a little bit of a discussion that took part just in this section, where Brahma was bewildered and he was about to pray. And I'm reading it because there's a nice exchange among the devotees. There's only three devotees, and you can see they don't so much wait their turns or make long monologues, but they're talking freely. And each one brings out something different. One of the devotees' names is Baladev, one is myself, Satsarupa, one is Ananta. And just to show you what to watch for, Baladev is very much caught up in a spontaneous way in the participation mood of reacting to what the Leela described, which is one way I say we should try to get into it. And that doesn't mean to imagine that you're one of the players in Krishna Leela, but you get very closely observed what Sukadeva is describing, and you identify with what's going on and the moods of the different people. So he gets quite caught up in this. And Ananta responds from a different level, more seeing the lessons that this teaches to him as a person. And in this section, I seem to act as a kind of a moderator, trying to bring it together to for a coherent view of the Leela. I'll just read a few selections. This is a Baladev. This is another example of Brahma getting a realization, as in the other pastime. Which Lord Brahma? Because in this pastime, Brahma actually saw, among all the Vishnu forms, many Brahma forms, and he was just one of them. He was one of the Brahmas worshipping Vishnu. Satsarupa, oh, I missed that. Baladev, yes, one of many Lord Brahmas. From where he started, in terms of his own self-esteem or self-identity, Krishna completely smoked him. A person like that, so proud. Krishna is so expert to smash him. I thought also that he does it to Indra and some of the other big devotees. Krishna really smashes them, but they come back for more. They're always there. They never bloop. That's what they need, and that is what Krishna does to his devotees. Satsarupa, yes, they are exemplary in that sense. They take their place and they surrender and ask forgiveness. Baladev, well, they get enlivened by the experience and they really snap out of it and right away surrender. Satsarupa, a very good lesson. Baladev, what a heavy lesson. Creator of the universe crashed. Satsarupa, again a mouse. Baladev, then it's just back to, and not only that, but they were smashed by the cowherd boy. That's where Brahma started. And that's where he finished. It's one thing to get smashed by your worshipful Vishnu, a person that you can admire. But now, back to the cowherd boy. That shows... Oh, okay. Then Ananta. That shows how deep Brahma's love and trust was. I know with myself, sometimes when someone will get very heavy with me, it's difficult. But if you actually have love and trust for that person, you can deal with it. So this is nice. We're all talking about the fact in this conversation that, and we're sort of like pushed along by this one devotee's great enthusiasm, Baladev, to talk about how Brahma was smashed. We are all like relating to that, and they're saying, yes, Brahma is very loyal. So then Ananta is saying how it feels to be smashed and how it's difficult. So this is nice, these are different levels, moving from one level to another. And very relevant topics for us too. For Brahma, he has such a powerful position. He must have so much love and trust for Krishna because he allows a little cowherd boy to do that. Sometimes I want that chastisement, but it has to come from the right person. Sasvarupa. So that is another major theme of this pastime, that we can meditate. The bruising of the false ego, being reduced, which we all have to go through. Baladev. Brahma is so intelligent, and Krishna just blew right by him. Sasvarupa. He's bewildered, and it's like we can almost picture Brahma completely dumbfounded, like a person going, Baladev. This is the phenomena of reaching the end of your intelligence. Krishna just spun him out, all four heads. Ananta, that's one of the experiences I had. It's almost like Krishna takes you beyond your intelligence. It's like you have no intelligence. Baladev, you really get a feeling that this is a picture of what it means that Krishna is unlimited. Here is someone that we worship, the Lord of Mother Saraswati, getting completely overwhelmed and taken to the limit. It's like when you melt down a computer or something like that. You stick an unsolvable problem in and it just blows. Sastrupa, his computer is the biggest one in the universe. What he does, we can't even understand. Baladev, yes, the person who runs everything, figures out where everything goes, where all the mosquitoes go, and not only that, there are a million other demigods. He does all that in a moment, but Krishna just goes right by him. We can't understand Krishna. Right. Ananta. This is the kindness of Krishna, because in the material world we're always protecting ourselves from that. Very careful that nothing goes beyond our scope or intelligence or our ability. But when you come to Krishna consciousness, Krishna is very kind. He will take you beyond that. Actually, at that point, you're able to become free from false ego and pride. Sasrupa. Usually somebody may force us by physical strength to do that. They'll say, now do you understand? You have anything else to say? We reply, no, sir. Then he says, what did you say? You say, no, sir. But inside you're thinking, you so-and-so, you such-and-so. But when you actually are not just afraid of his physical power, but you're completely bewildered by him, and you know he's not malicious. Ananta, that is what is frightening in one sense, because you have some faith in Krishna. So that's nice. And there's a lot of openness among the devotees and feeling relaxed to say what they think. That helps us. Yes?
Port Maharaj, in the beginning of the story, says that Brahma actually wanted to see Krishna display more opulence.
Yes. He wanted to see more opulence. Meaning he didn't like the cowherd boy pastime.
So I thought like he might have been satisfied when he saw that Krishna.
Yeah, he was more than satisfied. Got what he asked for. You want to see opulence? But Brahma wasn't just there was a little like I'd like to see some opulence. It seems to me that I've got more opulence than Krishna. He was like a pencil, like that. Let's see if he's got as much opulence as I do. I don't think he does. I'll play a trick. All right. It was Ram Roy, was the tape good quality?
Pretty deep.
Okay. So we're going to start chapter 14 with just a short beginning, and then I'm going to comment on it, and then we'll go on to a group. This is always been for me one of my favorite visual descriptions of Krishna. This is opening two paragraphs of chapter 14.
Yeah.